From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Schneider of TV Guide magazine, filling in for Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
It was very humbling that in my mid-40s, I was going to go back out on the road and have to really dance for a living.
Comedian Adam Carolla has weathered career highs and lows, but he's been determined to always keep working. Now he's directed a movie in which he's also the star. Road Hard is an autobiographical comedy about a comedian's dark days on the road. He tells us how he got the money to make it and why he was adamant about working outside the Hollywood studio system. But first, on the News Banter, Amy Pascal finds a potent problem moving offices. And could the return of an old NBC exec be good news for Brian Williams? Stay tuned. It's The Business from KCRW. I'm joined by my partner in banter, Matt Bellany of The Hollywood Reporter. Hello, Matt.
Hi there.
So, Matt, Oscar season may be over, but the impact of last month's disappointing ratings for this year's telecast are still being felt. As you may recall, the ratings were down about 18% from 2014, about 36.6 million viewers, which is fine, but definitely a disappointment for the Motion Picture Academy. And now there's been a report that you guys wrote at The Hollywood Reporter that the Academy Board of Governors is thinking about bringing back the number of nominees for Best Picture back down to five.
Yeah, I mean, 6 years ago, the Academy, in response to mostly the fact that The Dark Knight did not get a Best Picture nomination, expanded the field to first 10 nominees and then as many as 10 nominees for Best Picture. And the thinking behind that move was, we're going to expand the field and more of these bigger blockbuster style movies that more of the public has seen will become Best Picture nominees, and it'll get the public more interested in the Oscars. And unfortunately for the Academy, since then, the numbers show that that hasn't been the case. The box office for the nominees has actually decreased from a lot of the earlier years, and this year was the lowest of them all. Other than American Sniper, none of the Best Picture nominees had become what you'd call a serious box office hit. So the thinking now is, why, quote unquote, cheapen the nominees for Best Picture by allowing as many as 10 if it's not going to bring into the tent those kinds of pictures that the public cares about?
But isn't the bigger problem in basically bringing it back down to five is you're not solving the problem of showcasing movies that people have actually heard of or seen? So they're back to the same problem they had 6 years ago.
True, but the thinking is, well, at least we've got our pristine five nominees, the very best pictures of the year, and we don't have to kind of cheapen the nomination process by having as many as 10. I actually disagree with that. I think that the films that have been nominated for Best Picture have all been very worthy, and it does bring attention, even if the Academy's choosing smaller films, to some films like Whiplash, some films like Theory of Everything that probably would not have gotten Best Picture nominations this year if there were only five nominees. Those are films that benefited a lot from the attention on getting a nomination, and they wouldn't have.
Now, what's interesting is that the Television Academy is going in the opposite direction. With the Emmys, they just recently announced that the top series nominees will move from 6 to 7. So for outstanding comedy or outstanding drama, you'll now have 7 nominees. But of course, that doesn't necessarily solve their problem either. There's so much great television that I would argue they ought to go to 10 nominees.
Yeah, I don't understand why they don't do the same thing that the Movie Academy did, which is go say, if there's 10 worthy nominees, we'll go to 10 if necessary, or we can go as few as 5, because there is so much great television on right now. And, you know, what's the downside? Honoring more? I don't understand that argument that it kind of cheapens the nominations if you have a little bit more. I think there's so much worthy out there that it would bring more people into the tent, and it would allow more fans to see their shows get nominated.
Now, Matt, speaking of changes in television, of course, we've been following the NBC News debacle closely, and Brian Williams, who's still out on break, out on leave for 6 months or for who knows how long because of allegations that he lied about his experience in Iraq being shot down in a helicopter. But now there's news that Andy Lack, who ran NBC News from 1993 to 2001, may be coming back to once again run that division and also perhaps help bring Brian Williams back.
Yeah, I think this is a very interesting move, which has not been made official, but it's probably happening at NBC. And I think it's really a sign that they want some stability there. I mean, Andy Lack represents a time at NBC News where the Today Show became dominant. You know, Nightly News was with Tom Brokaw. You know, they launched all of these cable properties. CNBC and MSNBC were doing a lot better than they are now. And I think they see this as a chance to kind of right the ship and bring in an adult that knows the news business and knows NBC. The question is, will it work? Because it's a very different time in the news business now than it was in the 90s.
Yeah, well, you know, what's also interesting and we should note is Andy Lack first came in 1993 to sort of right the ship after another NBC scandal when Dateline NBC was accused of rigging a GM truck to explode for the cameras. Andy came in and managed to right the ship. And he actually was instrumental in grooming Brian Williams to take over for Tom Brokaw. So he's also a big fan and big supporter of Brian Williams. So it's going to be really interesting to see what happens if indeed he gets this job. So now, Matt, I want to end things on a high note, if I may. one of the more fun stories to come out this week is news that as Amy Pascal prepares for her transition from Sony Pictures co-chair to On the Lot producer, we know she's taken over Seth Rogen's producing offices on the lot. But it sounds like there were some issues with, shall we say, the condition of the office.
Yeah, we had a story at Hollywood Reporter this week that the offices Amy Pascal is entering, there's been a delay because the smell of marijuana is so prominent because of its previous occupants, Seth Rogen and his producing partner. There's been no secret that he is a fan of marijuana, and I think that this is just a sort of another insult to injury type thing for Amy Pascal. She's got to wait a little bit longer, but I think everyone on the Sony lot has sort of had a laugh about this one.
Isn't it also a little ironic that, of course, Amy Pascal, famous for being very talent-friendly and very sort of forgiving of her talent, is now being impacted by the fact that maybe they were a little too lax in allowing Seth and his partners to do what they want in that office?
Well, it brings up an interesting point because, you know, now Amy Pascal is among the producers on the lot, and she's being given a lot of different projects that are very high profile for the studio. She's going to be working on the Spider-Man reboot that now will include Marvel Studios in a deal that they did with Disney. She's going to be working on the all-female Ghostbusters reboot. There are a couple of other very high-profile projects that she's going to be working on, and she's being paid what the New York Times reported is $40 million, as much as $40 million over 4 years to be a producer on the lot. So that the expectations for her are pretty high, and it'll be interesting to see how she works.
Yeah, and hopefully things don't go to pot. Thanks, Matt.
Thank you.
That's Matt Bellany, the executive editor of The Hollywood Reporter. Over the years, you might have heard comedian Adam Carolla on the call-in radio show Loveline, or seen him on The Man Show on Comedy Central, or even downloaded his daily podcast. He's even got his own cocktail, which he sells under the name Mangria. Between several hirings and firings, Carolla's become the king of the DIY do-it-yourself career, which is fitting because he's also a carpenter. Now he can add another title to his ever-growing jobs list, director. Carolla co-wrote and directed Road Hard with frequent collaborator Kevin Hench. Carolla also stars in the movie. He plays comedian Bruce Madsen, a former TV host who has since fallen on hard times and is forced to go back on the road doing stand-up.
All we really are is just an accumulation of every bad thing that's ever happened to us before today. I don't remember when I got my television show picked up. I remember when it was canceled. I just remember the bad stuff.
Unlike his character, Carolla's never stopped working. He's a self-proclaimed millionaire, his podcast is one of the most downloaded in the world, and his blunt, tell-it-like-he-sees-it attitude has earned him a cadre of loyal fans. Carolla's acted in movies before. He starred in the 2007 self-financed film The Hammer, which got decent reviews but bombed at the box office. When it came to directing for the first time, Carolla's aspirations were based not so much in fame and fortune, but the desire to try something new.
You know, I just want variety. Like, we all know, hey, you don't want to be a ditch digger. Yeah, because you just sit over the same trench all day, every day. It's repetition and it's horrible. And, you know, any job, no matter how glamorous, like showbiz, can get a lot of repetition too and get a little miserable too. So for me, it's not just about doing comedy, but it's about mixing it up. So about the time you're sick of writing a book, you do a podcast. And when you get tired of doing a podcast, you do a TV show. And for me, you know, making a movie is something that pops up on my radar every 7 or 8 years.
Well, let's talk about Road Hard, because your character is a comic named Bruce, who used to be on something called The Bro Show. You know, quickly, you realize there's a lot of comparison to in real life how you co-hosted The Man Show on Comedy Central. There are a lot of inside jokes like that for people who know your work. And was it the plan from the beginning to do something that was very autobiographical?
Yeah, I have a sort of go for what you know adage that has worked nicely for me in my career. And it started way, way, way back when I met Jimmy Kimmel, and he told me to come up with a character to do on the morning show he was working on. And I was thinking of this gay character that did movie reviews. And I started to come up with all these different stupid ideas that everyone had done before and that I wasn't really capable of doing. And eventually I came up with Mr. Burcham, the woodshop teacher, because I was a carpenter and because I knew all the tools and the lingo and the whole nine yards. And that character was very successful. So I realized at that point, doing things you know is just a much better call than creating things from whole cloth. So this movie is a mixture of my life experiences, with definitely some hyperbole in there and definitely some scenes that never happened to me. But I don't know if you can tell the scenes that have happened before versus the ones that never happened before. And that's probably the way I like it.
It looks like you even shot some of the fake talk show scenes, the ones that Jay Mohr hosts, on the set of the Jimmy Kimmel Live show.
Yeah, we did. With a low budget film, it's really tough to get facilities. Jimmy was really gracious to let us, and ABC was, for that matter, too, to let us come in there and shoot a movie in a studio.
Now, has Jimmy seen the movie? Did it cut a little too close to home for the two of you? Or have you guys had a good laugh about it?
He's seen it, and we had a good laugh about it. And I didn't want to make the guy who was sort of roughly based on his character into a villain or an antagonist. I wanted to make him into a sort of a tough love guy, a guy who was going to take my character and kind of explain to him, yeah, I know you're looking for a handout, but I'm going to give you a hand instead. And yeah, I didn't want to make Jay Mohr's character into the ex-partner douchebag, because that's not the relationship I have with Jimmy at all. On the other hand, I wanted him to have some teeth. So I think we walked that line pretty well.
And that's probably where the story in the movie in Road Hard and your actual story in real life sort of diverges. Because in real life, after your radio station flipped formats in 2009 and you were out of a job, you hit the road just like what happens in the movie. But from there, you sort of took a very different path. But first off, let me ask you about sort of focusing a good chunk of the movie on the road and that experience that you had at the time. Was that what kind of inspired you to sort of focus on that in Road Hard?
Yeah, it was very humbling that in my mid-40s, I was going to go back out on the road and have to really dance for a living. And sometimes doing 3 shows a night, you know, no middle, no opener, just like 3 95-minute shows in a row in some strip mall in Kirkland, Washington or Addison, Texas. And it really was like a grind, staying in bad hotels and motels and playing crappy dive clubs. And it was kind of sad. And I would get to some little broken down club outside of Atlanta and I'd say, who's coming in next week? And they'd go, Andrew Dice Clay's coming in next week. And I'd think to myself, that guy's played Madison Square Gardens.
Yeah.
I feel bad for me. Now I feel bad for the Dice Man. But I started seeing all these really familiar names and faces and guys that had great theatrical careers at one time and TV shows and guys who'd been on Broadway and packed not just theaters, but, you know, 7,000-seat venues. And here they are coming to the Comedy Shack outside of Atlanta. And I just thought, wow, that's got to be tough on them. Even though everyone was still making a fine living doing stand-up, it felt like such a big step backwards that it was depressing and humbling, and I just thought, someone's got to make a movie about this.
In the movie, your character is constantly, everyone remembers him from his time hosting the Bro Show. And I imagine at the time you were probably getting a lot of that. Oh, hey, it's that guy from the Man Show. Hey, whatever happened to you? Did you get a lot of that? And did that also sort of drive you, I don't want this to be my final credit?
Yeah, I got, you know, the thing and the reason I used it as a device in the movie is the only thing that could be worse for my character or for any of these guys is if their old partner from the show that they're recognized from has gone on to be the new king of late night TV, because that's when everyone would say, oh man, how's Jimmy doing? You know, wow, that guy's really killing it out there. That's exciting. And then they'd sort of pause and go, that's gotta be rough, right? And I'd go, no, I'm, you know, he's a great friend of mine. And if I send him an email 9 minutes before he goes out and does his show, he'll get back to me before he starts his show. And he's a great guy, and I have a great relationship with him. But I felt bad that everyone thought that I felt that way.
Yeah, they almost want there to be some sort of drama or some sort of tragedy.
Well, it's a really hard... You see, I don't mind feeling sorry for myself. I'm an expert at that. I hate it when other people feel sorry for me. It's really degrading when people go, man, that's got to be rough, right, Jimmy? You know, hanging out with Ben Affleck and Matt Damon. I'm like, no, it's awesome. Yeah, I'm sure it is. It's got to be rough. Like, it wasn't the reality of the situation. It was people's interpretation of the situation that made me feel bad.
Now, in reality, in real life, you gravitated to podcasting, which was sort of the latest in this do-it-yourself kind of career ethos that you've practiced for decades now. Was bucking the system always the career plan, or did it come out of necessity for you?
No, I never had a career plan. If I had a career plan, I'd probably be further ahead in my career. My career plan was to work, was to do new things, was to follow my instincts, whether it was to continue doing podcasting, even though it wasn't generating any income and it was costing me a lot of money and bandwidth, or to stop doing the Man Show after 100 episodes and move on to being a writer on Jimmy's Late Night Show. You know, for me, it was always just about what's next. Onward, not necessarily upward, just what's next. I made a movie called The Hammer about 8 years ago. People liked that movie a lot. And then,
yeah, which also was a little autobiographical as well.
Yeah, I'm happy to say that I made one movie about a boxing carpenter and another movie about a stand-up comedian with a popular TV series, and they're both autobiographical.
So the next movie is about podcasting, right?
Yeah. It's good range, and I'm glad I've lived a life that had that kind of range. But yeah, The Hammer was well-received, but I didn't make any money off it, and you know, I just went 8 years before I had this other idea for Road Hard, and I like it in that it's organic, you know? I mean, if you have a deal with Sony and you have to crank out 3 pictures a year, 2.5 of those ideas aren't going to be organic. This was, I sat around for 8 years with no intention of making another movie and then had this idea.
Coming up after a short break, Adam Carolla on the pros and cons of crowdfunding and why it means he has to buy his fans pizza. You're listening to The Business from KCRW.
Take KCRW with you on one of our smartphone apps. Available for the iPhone, Android, and BlackBerry. You can stream KCRW live, listen to podcasts, and all our news and music streams. Learn more and download at kcrw.com/apps.
This is The Business, and I'm Michael Schneider of TV Guide Magazine, filling in for Kim Masters. We're talking to comedian Adam Carolla, the director and star of the new movie Road Hard. Throughout the course of his varied career, Carolla has done things his way, And when it came to filmmaking, he took a very similar self-sufficient approach. To get the money to make Road Hard, he started a campaign on Fund Anything, a new crowdfunding platform launched in 2013 and backed by Donald Trump, the man who once fired Carolla on the reality TV show Celebrity Apprentice. Carolla fans responded to the crowdfunding call and contributed more than $1 million in a month. That's a very different scenario than Carolla faced 8 years ago when he made the movie The Hammer.
When I did my first movie, there was no crowdfunding. It didn't exist. So that was a lot of can rattling, and that's a very tedious, humbling experience, you know, begging people to give you money to make a film that they don't believe is going to give any return on their investment. And it sucks up a lot of time and calories that could be going into writing the script or what have you. So I knew I didn't want to go the route where I borrowed a bunch of money from everybody, made the movie, paid everyone back, and never made a penny myself for all the effort. And I don't know, if I was independently wealthy and semi-retired, that would be an option.
You are a literal millionaire, though.
Well, that's true, but I have literal twins and literal mortgages and, you know, 15 employees I have to keep going. And it's just, I got to run a business. And I realized that just wasn't a route I was interested in going. So I saw what other people were doing with the crowdfunding. So we got it together. We got with Fund Anything because they were kind of the new kids on the block and they offered us a better deal. I don't remember what it was, but they said, look, you know, we want you to be on our website. We'll shave a couple of points and we'll get behind you. And I said, fine. And that's where it kind of took off from.
Right. I mean, a nice quid pro quo. I mean, they know that you've got quite a following, so a great way to launch their service. And what about Donald Trump? Is he still involved? Has he seen the movie? What is your relationship with him like these days post a Celebrity Apprentice?
I will doubt if Donald Trump ever sees this movie. No, I don't have a relationship with Donald Trump. I don't speak to Donald Trump. We don't exchange emails. I'm not waiting for Trump's thumbs up for this film.
Well, you raised $1 million in less than a month. Was that enough to pay for most of the film?
Yeah. What you do with the crowdfunding stuff is for every dollar you raise, you set aside a dime or 7 cents or whatever to pay people back in terms of posters and Blu-rays. And, you know, Adam comes to your house and does stand up or whatever it is. I'll give you for instance, one of the things was watch a movie and eat pizza at Phil Rosenthal, the producer of Everyone Loves Raymond, who's a good friend of mine and
who's in the movie.
In the movie. So, you know, 2 years ago, I told Phil, look, can we offer up, you know, he's got a theater in his house and he has pizza and, you know, all that stuff. I said, can we offer that up as a, you know, like pay a few $100, get to go to Phil's house, watch the movie? Well, the chickens have come home to roost. And that's going to take place in a few days. Now, who's providing the pizza? Because poor Phil, who already forgot about this, is already letting a bunch of strangers into his home, should not have to go and buy the pizza for everyone as well. We can agree on that, right?
Are you bringing in the pizza yourself?
I shall bring in the pizza, but part of the money we raised needs to go back to buying pizza for the guys who bought the pizza party at Phil Rosenthal's house.
Yeah, Harvey Weinstein isn't having these same problems, these same issues.
No, he does not.
Well, I like the idea of, I mean, not only crowdfunding, but you're sort of friend sourcing in a way, too. A lot of the actors in the movie are real-life friends of yours. You mentioned Phil Rosenthal, but, you know, Jay Moore, Diane Farr, who you co-hosted Loveline on MTV back in the day with, David Alan Grier, Larry Miller. How much convincing did it take them to sign on? And was I'm guessing there wasn't much of a payday. It was more kind of a friendship kind of arrangement.
Yeah, it was a friendship and in a relationship. I think they knew that they were going to get good material and have good dialogue and good scenes and get to act with each other. And I must say, you do find out who your friends are when you make a movie. You know, I just said, I got a movie and I'd like you to be in it. And the good news is, you're only going to shoot for a day or two. The bad news is you're not really going to get paid, but you'll get to be a part of something that's pretty cool, and we'll get to hang out a little bit. And they all just went, yeah, when do you need me?
You know, there have been some filmmakers, Zach Braff is the one that famously comes to mind, who got a lot of flack for using crowdfunding for their projects. Did you get any of that kind of pushback, or do your fans sort of feel differently about contributing to this?
You know, I think when it came to Zach Braff's situation, I think some of the pushback was, you already have distribution, what are you asking us for, mm-hmm. or something like that. In cases of like Veronica Mars, it's like Warner Brothers owns Veronica Mars. Like, that's their right. entity. If you guys want to make a Veronica Mars movie, make a movie because you own it.
Right, right.
I think there was a little of that in some other situations, that there may have been some pre-existing conditions. Mine was just a blank sheet of paper. And some people don't like it, and I get it. Look, when the Rolling Stones come to town, you're not obligated to buy a ticket. But if you'd like to see the Rolling Stones, you can buy a ticket. And if you want some really crappy seats, it'll be $50. And if you want some really killer seats, it'll be $5,000. You decide. Or anywhere in between. And I look at this sort of crowdfunding thing as sort of akin to that, which is you don't have to go or see it in the first place. If you'd like to get in for $25, you'll get a Blu-ray, you'll get a poster, you'll get a t-shirt, like you'll get something. And if you want to get in for $15,000, I'll come to your house and do stand-up in your living room, you know, or anything in between. We'll go to Phil Rosenthal's house.
Right, just bring pizza.
Right.
Let's talk about the release strategy. How involved were you in the distribution plan? You're doing a simultaneous theatrical and VOD release. Where did that strategy come from, and what kind of numbers are you hoping for?
Oh, I have no idea what to hope for. I really have just zero expectation level. Part of it is based on making a movie that is, you know, certified fresh on Rotten Tomatoes that I never saw a penny on 8 years ago. So I don't know. I have almost no expectation level mm-hmm. based on my last experience. VOD and a theatrical simultaneous release was the idea of some folks called Film Buff out of New York who we're working with. And it just seems to be the way to do it these days. Come out and select cities, and to everyone else who don't live in those select cities, you can go to your computer, go to iTunes or Amazon and go get it that way.
You know, we've talked to directors in the past who hate thinking about their works being watched on an iPad or a phone. Do you care where people see your movie?
You know, I would like them to do it in a theater, in a communal experience, because I can tell you it gets a lot of out loud laughs in the theater, and it's infectious. And I always hope that the people experience it that way. But, you know, if you got to go VOD, I can live with that. But don't watch it on your laptop.
Definitely don't watch it on the phone, right?
Definitely not on your phone, and especially not while you're driving.
There you go. Adam Carolla's directorial debut, Roadhard, is in select theaters and video on demand now. Thanks for joining us, Adam.
Thanks, Mike.
And that's The Business. Caitlin Parker produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna and Melissa Morton. You can hear The Business on demand with the KCRW smartphone app and get the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you download podcasts. And while you're there, check out KCRW's TV podcast, The Spinoff. I'm the host, along with Joe Adalian of Vulture.com, and we bring you in-depth conversations with TV journalists, executives, showrunners, and a lot more. I'm Michael Schneider of TV Guide Magazine. We'll see you next week on The Business.